Welcome to a very special episode of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today we're going to be interviewing Dana Severson of Wahooly. This should be pretty exciting because it has a tremendous amount to do with the corporate opera and everything we're talking about. You'll probably recognize Wahooly as a company that we discussed last week on the 24th in episode 13. So, as usual, I am Matthew Furlough, and this is my co-host slash brother, James Furlough.
Hey, good to be here. Excited to learn more about Wahooly.
Yeah, I couldn't be more excited myself. This would be our first official interview. And so just so everybody knows, we're not going to be talking about anything else tonight. We will have our regular podcast where we talk about all sorts of exciting things, like the future of tech in 2012. But tonight, it is just the interview. So strap on your boots and get excited, because we're going to do this.
Hi there, is this Dana?
Yes, it is.
Hi there, this is James and Matthew Furlough.
How are you guys?
Hi.
Hi, we're doing good. So it turns out that Central Time is 2 hours different from Pacific, not 1 hour.
I figured there was something like that. It's not a big deal. Yeah, because that's why these things work better in the evening for me anyway. Everything is much more relaxed.
Right, makes sense.
Yeah, so you guys are in Oregon?
Well, kind of. I actually live in Oregon, and my brother Matthew lives in Silicon Valley in California.
Okay.
So
yeah. And what do you guys do?
So I work for Hewlett Packard during the day.
Okay.
And, so we do this weekly podcast as, you know, something fun to do together and talk about tech.
Yeah, it's very cool. I caught the one just in searching for Wahooly just to see what kind of mentions were out there. So I think I caught it pretty quickly and I enjoyed it.
Nice, cool. Glad to hear that.
Yeah, and so. Tell me again. Okay, which one of you is James?
I am James.
Okay,
and I'm Matthew.
Matthew. Okay, yeah, and I think I can tell the difference in voice. So
if you can't, that's all right. It can be hard.
Oh no. That's, I think I can. So I appreciate it, guys. I love that there's discussion happening and going on and. And so, yeah, I'm always happy to get the opportunity to chat with anyone. So my wife gets there's four of us now, and everybody that surrounds us on a daily basis is so sick and tired of hearing about Wahooly that anybody that has a welcome ear, I blab about it. So
nice, totally makes sense.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, Matthew.
I'd say that's funny because that's similar to what happened to James and I. That's a large part of why we started this podcast is because we had a similar thing where this is the kind of stuff that we're passionate for, and you know what Wahooly is doing is really something that we're interested in because it incorporates a lot of high technology and incorporates a lot of different companies going together and working together and a lot of innovations for the future. So it's really exciting just from the little that we've been able to gather about your company.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah, we're it's really taken off, and I mean we're really excited about that. And you know, the funny thing is we wondered when we launched we're not connected to Silicon Valley. Tony and I, Tony is the creative co-founder. He and I started a company called iDesign Your Logo back in 2010. And as a result of that startup, we had done some work. We did like Robert Scoble's logo on scoblizer.com. We did that one. And then did some stuff for Guy Kawasaki and a few other notable people. So that was really the only connections we had to sort of get things going. But in terms of VCs, angels, anybody in the tight knit community. We didn't have any of those connections going in, so we're like, well, we actually need what we're building, you know, for ourselves. So, you know, which is part of the reason why we're doing the same thing that we're going to be offering to startups for ourselves, you know, because essentially we need it and we believe in what it is that we're building. But, you know, aside from that, we just got really fortunate for you know, catching on pretty quickly with a few different media outlets, and then it just snowballed from there, and we got contacted by Clout, and then everything kind of just took off. So, yeah, we're you know, so it's basically, you know, leveraging our traction for other startups. So, you know, and it just builds off one another.
If you don't mind me interjecting really quickly here, since we'll be replaying this, can you give us a brief summary of what Wahooly is, just for people who are listening that don't exactly know?
Yeah, sure. So it's a couple, you know, it's really two different things for two different audiences. And you know, what we call it is sort of a cross between an accelerator and a crowdfunding resource. So if you look at it from a business standpoint, or, you know, existing business standpoint, we're a cross between a Y Combinator and a Kickstarter. So
yeah, okay.
So on the consumer side, or on our user side, you know, we're making it possible for the average person, the average socially connected person, to get a piece of potentially hundreds of startups by leveraging their influence in the marketplace. And on the flip side of that, we're providing startups with one of the most sought after resources that's available, which is traction. It's the issue that most startups are facing because of such a large number of tech-based, I mean, even apps. You know, apps is a great example. Apps are just, it's an overly saturated market. There's over 1 million on the iPhone alone, you know, and we're just talking about one platform, and you just get lost in the shuffle so quickly. So, you know, we're helping to bring sort of a theory out there on the what is it? It's the I can't think of the name of it. Anyway, it's a theory that talks about the tipping point of most businesses. So, and essentially, it's you know, it's the 15%. Is sort of the tipping point for mass adoption of any product. So it goes from the innovators to the early adopters to the early majority to the late majority. And what we're doing is we're helping to deliver the early majority, which is essentially that tipping point for most businesses to get to that mass adoption level.
Right.
We're bypassing the early adopters, bypassing the innovators, and just skipping right to the early majority, which in turn is providing the traction that businesses need to either, one, go off on their own and just move forward, or two, you know, it's a path to funding. Because really, you know, if you follow AngelList or any sort of VC blog, traction is one of the primary things that most VCs and angels are looking for. And, you know, and that kind of supersedes pretty much everything else. I mean, you can have a fairly weak team, but if you have traction in the marketplace, that's what matters. So, it's kind of the convergence of those two things. The way it started is that, two different things occurred. So, we are sort of ad guys from, you know, from our background is in advertising.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And what we saw is this opportunity with social networks and what's the, you know, this really dynamic thing that's occurring right now, where we're at this point where word of mouth marketing has come full circle. I mean, it's it's at such a massive scale right now. We've never, as a community of people, had such a powerful and loud voice in the marketplace. And, you know, we're, as a collaborative group of people, we're creating trends in the marketplace. We're changing policies. We're breaking the news. I mean, you know, just the recent Kim Jong-il passing was broken 50 hours before it hit mass media through social networks. You know, I mean, it's just a perfect example of what's happening in the marketplace that we're in right now. And all these companies, you know, all the way from startups to big brands, are trying to figure out a way to tap influencers and figure out a way to access influencers because they see the potential of what's occurring. Because we're just one base, you know, basically we're just one huge, massive media network. So what we really set out to do was, okay, how can we expand on what companies are trying to build right now by accessing influencers, but how can we do it as a way of accessing collaborative influence, which is really the key, because that's how trends are created. It's when everybody's talking about the same thing at once. You know, it's when everybody has sort of the same message, because there's a crossover between a lot of networks, and it's, you know, it's just like the basic advertising model where you need to see a message seven times before you act. It's kind of the same thing in social media to an extent, is that if you see enough people talking about the same thing, it just, out of sheer curiosity, creates a trend in your mind. And
right.
People sort of associate that with, you know, something that needs to be looked at or something that needs to be seen. So, you know, on one front, that's sort of the big vision, is, you know, creating collaborative influence as a vehicle. The second thing is, that, you know, from the startup side, we're passionate startup serial entrepreneurs. So, and one of the things that I did was, I was a writer for a while, and one of my assignments
Very
was
cool.
I did it for, I wrote for Ad Age, Fast Company, and then in Minneapolis I wrote for Twin Cities Business, and now I still write for a company, or a publication called Minnesota Business. I profiled startups for a year and a half, and I did over 70 interviews. They're all basically high-tech startups, and you know, one of the questions I always ask is, what's the biggest challenge that you're facing today? And as I mentioned, in one way or another, you know, it was coming in some form, was always traction and momentum. It's that we don't have enough users yet. We're looking for more, you know, beta users, or our customer base needs to grow, but they're always bootstrapped. So, you know, they're usually cash poor when it comes to that. And, you know, mm-hmm. they're maybe looking at doing a seed round or trying to go to a Series A, and they just don't have the momentum built yet because they don't have the user base. So,
which, like you said, is important to getting that initial funding anyways.
Right, right. It's a double-edged sword, you know. I mean, how much do you invest in a startup when everything is so bare bones right now, you know? And that's really what it takes, is either some luck or some sort of vehicle that can help you get to that mass adoption level. So it's essentially those two things. So one thing that this is a recent discovery, and it's I'm essentially breaking it with you guys. We're adding sort of a, and this has always been in the works, but we haven't really formalized it yet. So we're adding a sort of a gamification level and aspect to Wahooly. So our users are going to have the ability to participate in startups and be rewarded for their activity. And it's, you know, what most people know about what we're building is that it's about promotion, but it's actually a lot deeper than that. So there's three variables that we track for each user, and one is the promotion, and it's not the actual action of the promotion; it's the result of the promotion. So you could spam your Twitter feed all day long, and it's not gonna help you. The only way it's gonna help you is if somebody actually clicks on that and an action has occurred. And those actions are dictated by the startup. So every startup has their own unique actions. So one of them might be, we're looking for additional people to subscribe, or we're looking for a download, or we're looking for, you know, some sort of action needs to be created. So that's one way that we're tracking that metric. the second way that we're tracking that metric is actually off usability. So each of our startups that we work with have a snippet on their website, and again, they create, they give us three different variables on how we're tracking somebody's activity on each startup. And you know, if we're using Facebook for an example, maybe it would be every time that user logs into their Facebook account, or maybe it's every time somebody posts an update on their Facebook account, or every time somebody comments on somebody else's, you know, post. Those might be the three variables. And based off those three variables, we're tracking that and then rewarding. And then the third variable, the third thing that we're doing is feedback. And this is the real... this is the real kicker for startups, is because it's real-world, real-user feedback. And it's essentially the value of the feedback that our users are providing to that startup. And it's all voted on based on our community. So if you as a user provide, you know, you're the first one to find some sort of valuable piece of information that's going to help that startup, and that piece of information is validated by the user group, you as a user who initiated that initial piece of feedback, you're going to be rewarded for that more so than the people that validated that feedback.
Very cool.
Those people that validate it, are upvoted, so to speak, are also going to be rewarded. So, yeah, it's much more than just the promotional side of it. You know, we're delivering three aspects to a startup which are really valuable. And you know, so it's all those things that combine which are going to help, you know, help accelerate these businesses.
Yeah, definitely. I remember reading through your site. It was clear that promotion was a huge piece of it. And I think I had maybe heard it mentioned somewhere that, you know, that feedback was also a component of it. But it's cool to hear more on, you know, and how you structured it and, you know, you're bringing it into a place, because that's very cool. That's very useful indeed.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, it's the sexiest part is the promotional side of it. So it's kind of the thing that we lead in with. It's the part that people can get their arms around and understand the most. So it's sort of the thing that we talk about the most. It's certainly the thing that most media outlets want to discuss when they're writing about us and criticizing us and so on and so forth. So we've gotten our fair share of criticism, that's for sure. But yeah, the feedback is incredibly incredibly valuable to the startups.
Yeah, I read recently. I've actually heard this statistic quite a few times in the last 6 months. But that 1% of your user base, whether it's a radio show, it's your listeners, or a website, your readers, only about 1% actually give feedback or interact with the show. So all of your callers, all of your texters, all of your commenters. They claimed it held true for even large things like huge websites like Dig and Reddit, which are all community-based. Only about 1% of the actual readers and the people receiving the content actually provide any feedback, provide any content. And so I think, you know, as a small company or a small startup, I could see how having only a few users and not having any incentive to give feedback would be really difficult, because if you only have 1%, you theoretically need 100 people before you'd even get your first reliable feedback. And so I think I definitely could see how that would be really compelling for starting anything, to have a system where you have people who are compelled to interact and, more importantly, through whatever means, are encouraged to actually provide feedback. And I've always been amazed by the power of internet points, whether it be upvotes or digs or likes on Facebook. They really do compel people to do stuff.
You know, it's interesting. Yeah, it's a motivation. There's a lot of there's been studies that have been done on you know, motivation, and actually the most recent one that I saw was, and I posted it on Google Plus because it was really interesting. It was how the higher the reward, the less engaged somebody is, and the less, you know, less inclined they are to perform better. And the lower the reward, it's the opposite, and it's complete opposite, you know, methodology of what you thought. But I think it's a matter of participation. You know, people like to, you know, feel like their opinions are heard and, you know, to some extent, which is why, you know, surveys work when there's no incentive. You know, people just want to know that their voice, you know, is loud enough and their point is being made, you know, to some extent. We of course have layers of points that are built into it that are going to be rewarded for it. So, I it's certainly not going to be for a lack of incentive. That's for sure. So, you know, one of the things, and this is kind of what I was getting at. So, one of the things that we're doing now is, depending on how, you know, those three variables that I was just mentioning, those things are going to impact the percentage of the whole that each user has of that particular startup. Now, there's a second layer to this, which is sort of the motivation. So, it's for most people, they're going to understand that startups are a long-term investment. You know, we're looking at it as a long-term investment, and we're hoping that our users see it that way as well. We'll have an intended exit strategy, which will be, you know, we're going to be transparent about everything. So, you know, before you have an opportunity to, or before you decide whether you want to join a startup or not, it's going to be very clear on what our intended exit strategy is. Whether that actually comes to life at that specific date and time, who knows? You know, I mean, nobody can predict that. So we understand that there needs to be motivation in between to keep people, you know, geared up and continuing to work towards a common goal.
So let me make sure I understand this right. Basically, you guys negotiate with the companies for some percentage of them, say 5%. And then in some ways it's almost like a mutual fund, but the users get to choose which companies they want to be a part of. So when you're saying we choose, you literally are saying that you guys will choose when to exit that company and then you will disperse whatever funds you earn from that exit?
Yeah, that's essentially how.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I mean, we represent our investors, so to speak. You know, I mean,
yeah.
We're sort of the VC of, you know, a VC firm from that standpoint, where we represent the best interests of us and our investors, and we all have a common goal, you know, is to make each one of these companies wildly successful, which they're not going to be. You know, I mean, if we're looking at a standard model that exists out there, only 5% of every business that comes through our, you know, our doors is going to be successful. You know, so it's a pretty low success rate. But our fundamental goal is to increase that success rate. You know, that's the reason why we're doing what we're doing. So we're hoping to shift that number up, you know, and that's the real dynamic here. But there is going to be failures. So, you know, we're going to lose out. Our users are going to lose out on the ones that just don't make it. And that's the reality of what we're doing. But the cool thing is it's the ultimate vetting process. So, you know, we can do our best to present the best opportunities for everyone. And, you know, that's what we're doing right now is we're going through the startups that have applied and, you know, sort of picking the ones that are best suited, that kind of fit the criteria, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it's all the users that decide, you know, if this is a viable business or not. And if it's not, the company gets kicked out of our system. So if there isn't a sort of minimum number of users that it's reached, and there isn't enough interest in something, then it no longer exists in our system. So, you know, it's not us that ultimately decides which companies are going to be, you know, in it for the long haul. It's all of you, you know.
That's cool. So when users get to decide, do they get to play around with it for an hour, or are they just handed a description and a picture? How do they decide?
But we're actually just laying out that page right now. So, it's going to be a work in progress, obviously, and that's why we're entering in beta, because we don't know all the right information to present up front. But everything is, although we're partnered with Cloud, we understand that Cloud has gotten a lot of flack lately, and a lot of it has to do with their, you know, with some of the non-transparent algorithm that they're using. And for their business model, I can understand why they're doing the things the way that they're doing. For our business model, fortunately for us, we can be as transparent as possible and not worry about somebody gaming our system. So the thing that we want to do is make sure that users are fully aware of what's going on when they are presented with an opportunity. So every startup that you see is going to come through two different channels. One is going to be in the notifications tab, you know, within the dashboard, and then also it's going to get emailed. And just by nature of having 200 startups in the next year, there's probably going to be about one every couple days that's going to be presented. So there's going to be lots of activity.
Yeah.
On that evaluation, and I hate to liken it to this, but I'm going to, it's sort of like a Groupon page in a sense. Because there's going to be a limited number of spots. We just have to do that. You know, we have, as of right now, we have 27,000 users, and there just isn't enough room in every startup to have, you know, it's probably going to be right around the 5,000-6,000, depending on the total number of total percentage of equity of each startup. It's going to vary, but it has to be appealing enough for a group of people to be able to disperse it. So it's going to be cut off, so it's going to be limited. We just don't know how quickly those spots are going to fill up, and that's the thing that we'll discover once launch occurs. But we're going to try to provide as much information up front as possible so quick decisions can be made. So we're going to say, you know, we're going to tell you, give you the high-level pitch, the vision, you know, kind of where this is heading, why this is such a cool thing. There will be a link to the site. So every startup that we're working with is at least far enough along where they've got, you know, they're in beta. There's going to be the intended exit strategy and how much equity is at play, including, you know, who are the founders and sort of where they're at in their cycle. We have startups right now that we're going to be introducing in the first quarter that have already gone through a seed round that are approaching Series A. So they already have momentum built. They already have valuations. You know, I mean, there's some legitimate, you know, good, really good startups that are entering the system right now.
Nice.
Yeah, which is very cool, because that's, at the end, that's really what matters. It's like, you know, we want to support the ones that we think that are worthy of being supported. You know, I mean, it doesn't do anybody any good if nobody sees the potential in them, you know. And
Brian, I know one of my initial thoughts was you could potentially have a company who tried to go out on their own, couldn't get anybody's attention, and then went, well, what the heck, let's try this. And, you know, now we're willing to give up equity for some help. And, you know, therefore it would be kind of bottom scrap. But it's good to hear that that's not actually the case.
No. I mean, we're doing our best to you know, to get the ones that we think are the best. But ultimately, you know, as of right now, it's just, you know, it's a team of four people that are evaluating the startups based off the answers that have, you know, been given to us. And, you know, some follow-up questions, things of that nature. But, you know, again, ultimately, it's going to be to the users to decide, you know, which ones are viable and which ones aren't. If they're not viable businesses, if nobody really attaches themselves to it, because there's a commitment for each person, you know, to get involved in these things. And if they don't hit that minimum, then they're no longer, you know, a business for everyone. So it would be really hard to slide a mediocre business through our model.
So why don't you, so maybe you can speak more to why you've put the cap at 200, and maybe it's just your bandwidth, because I know I could potentially see, you know, a model where basically you tell companies, hey, put up, you know, give us your information, say how much equity you're willing to give and how many users you want so they can do the math themselves, and then they'll self-select. You know, I guess that's closer to the Kickstarter model, I suppose. So I guess maybe you can speak to more why you're limiting the number of companies right now.
Yeah, because it has to be really hands-on at first. There's a lot of contractual information that needs to occur.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah,
I mean, there's just a lot of legalities in our business model, and we have to make sure that everything is contractually tied in. Because of the way that we're structured, everything has to be, even our users, you know, everybody that's signed up and has set up a dashboard isn't technically, you know, contractually part of us yet until that first startup occurs, and they have to go through the agreement process and the terms and so on and so forth. So I, you know, there might be a way at some point here to sort of expedite that process and do exactly that. We're talking about maybe doing a super group. So there's a group of users maybe, you know, 1,000 people that get sort of first look at all the startups that are applying.
Oh, interesting.
And kind of help us through that process. Those 1,000 people then, the way that we decide that is based off activity points. So everybody's going to be accruing activity points. Whether your percentage of the pie is going up or down, it doesn't really matter, because if you're doing activities, you're increasing your activity points. And those activity points are going to lead to perks down the road, which is part of our incentive program. One of those would be that super user group. And, you know, as a privilege to be in part of that super user group, you'd have first access to these startups. But you would also be part of that vetting process up front. So, I mean, we're looking at it from a couple different standpoints, but yeah, I mean, some of it has to do with bandwidth, and the other part has to do with just the legalities of what we need to kind of make sure we're adhering to. And, you know, the corporate structure of the startups that we're working with is important as well, because of the way shares are handled. So, you know, there's just a lot of involvement on our end.
Right, yeah.
Makes sense. Getting everything set up.
How big is your legal team?
We don't have a legal co-founder, if that's what you're asking. As of today, we're working with 3 different law firms. But there is quite a bit. But, you know, as much attention as we've gotten in regards to the SEC side of our business and the FTC side of our business, they've been resolved pretty easily. You know, I mean, on the surface, it looks a lot more complex than it actually is. And they're relatively simple solutions, you know, that are all adhering to the guidelines of both sides of the coin there. You know, we partnered with Comply about 2 weeks ago, and that sort of takes care of the FTC side of our business. All of our URLs that are being used throughout the system will be a Comply URLs, so they're going to come accustomed with disclosures. When you share when you as a user share a site, it's going to come with an iframe, and that iframe is going to have a disclosure. So our users aren't going to have to think about hashtagging some sort of disclosure statement, or they don't have to worry about it. You know, it's all built into the system. So, that was fairly easy, because Comply already had that thing figured out. You know, it's just a matter of integrating their system into ours. The SEC, that took a little bit more time and money, but it's all ironed out now, so that's good.
Cool.
Nice. Very cool. So I know that you talked about, you know, you're teaming up with Clout, and it sounds like people with a Clout score of 45 and above get an automatic invite, or they get invited, or however that works. So could people, you know, like myself, I'm not on Clout, or like my brother who has a ridiculously low Clout score, still participate?
I'm really embarrassed by that.
Yeah, isn't that funny how they've created that illusion? And you know what? It's actually being used. You know, it's being used in employment. I don't know if it's I don't know to what extent, but applications are starting to ask what your Clout score is. And for the record, I find Clout to be absolutely brilliant. What Joe and his team have done is just it's phenomenal. I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, have really polar differences on Clout and what they're doing and, you know, how they're tracking and so on and so forth. But the vision behind what it is that they're doing is just absolutely brilliant. So I couldn't speak highly enough of that, of their product. But our partnership with Clout, when we first started, we intended to charge a fee for our users. So it was going to be a $5 fee. And essentially why we wanted to do that was, one, we thought it'd be nice for seed money. We're like, oh, God, this is a way to create, you know, a little seed fund for ourselves.
Yeah.
But really what we were trying to do is we were calling it a serious fee. We wanted to be able to go to startups and say, hey, startups, look, we have all these users, and not only have they signed up, but they've, you know, they've paid $5 to participate. They're serious. You know, they really want to do this.
Yeah.
When we ended up negotiating a partnership with Clout, we decided, okay, you know what, this is even more important. Now we can validate to the startups that we have a user that has a Clout score of such and such that already indicates that they are socially active, that they participate, and that Clout recognizes them as high influence. So now we know that our users, at least, you know, 80% of them are in the 90th percentile of influence online, which is a really strong statement. So our validation changed from a currency, an actual currency, to a social currency. It's like, okay, now we have our validation right there. The Clout, so we did it for a timed period, which basically brings us up to beta launch. So that ends on the 31st, so it ends in a couple days. After that, I think on Monday we're sending out an email, because we've had a lot of people that have signed up just through our homepage, which I'm assuming, is that where you guys got to us, through the homepage?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, you guys will be getting an email next week to get access to set up your dashboard and so on and so forth. So there's a handful of our users. Like I said, about 80% of our users will be through Clout, and then the other portion will be through the homepage. Even though you don't have a Clout, maybe you don't have a Clout account, we're still getting all of our data pushed from Clout, so we'll know a lot about you.
Got it.
You know, without you having even registered. So we're still going to have, you know, we'll still know where our users rank in terms of Clout scores overall and, you know, basic demographic, geographic data.
Mm-hmm.
The idea, though, eventually is, I mean, we're like I said, around 27,000 right now. We're not cutting sign-ups off after our beta launch. People can still sign up throughout the year and still get into our system. It's the first 25,000 that share on the 5% of Wuhuli. So that was kind of the appeal to get in the early batch, in the early group. But we intend by the end of 2012, and I guess at our current rate, we'll probably exceed it, but we intend to have, you know, 100,000 users by the end of 2012. At that point, we're going to start segmenting our startups based on data. So if you're, one of the questions that we ask in our profile is, do you use a smartphone? If so, what platform do you use? So now we can start sending you startups that apply. So depending on, you know, the profession you're in, it might be more B2B stuff that focuses on you, or it could be apps, it could be, you know, fashion, if you're into fashion, so on and so forth. So, yeah, we'll start segmenting startups after, I guess it depends. It depends on how quickly we get to our user number. So,
awesome.
Yeah, that's a good idea, I think. And I'm sure your users would, you know, appreciate not getting, you know, spam email and stuff they're not interested in. Totally makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, at first, and, you know, that's part of the limit of what we're doing. So, like, 200 is acceptable. But, you know, our intention in 2013 is to have 1,000 go through our system. So once we get up to that number, it's a bit too much for everyone to take in. Not
yeah.
to say that they won't have access to those. So there's still going to be, you know, if you feel like we're sending you the wrong stuff, you know, you still have access to see the other things too. And maybe it's just that we weren't learning enough intelligent information from you along the way. So, you know, that will be able to be refined along the way.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. So I have, I guess, more of a general type of question. You look at some other startups, and the two that came to my head were Instagram and Foursquare. You know, where they seem to just have this, you know, natural ability to gain a ridiculous number of users really fast. You know, when you look at them, you know, what are some of the things that you saw that they're doing right? And, you know, are there any ways that you guys are trying to, you know, emulate or copy what they're doing? Or is that kind of in the startup's hands?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the basic the basic underlying theme of with all those, I think they're at like one of the two is at 15 million users, something like that. I think the other one's at, well, I don't know. I think they're both around 15 million users, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
It's
growing.
it's just a sick amount. But, you know, really, it all snowballs once you start hitting that. Like I said, it's that mass adoption level. It's like once the outside demographic gets involved in what you're doing, the people that you didn't expect to be users. So it's like that Facebook phenomenon, and when all of a sudden the first stage was your parents signed up, and you're like, okay, this is getting massive, and then your grandma signs up, and you're like, holy shit, this is taken to the whole next level.
Yeah.
But now you're getting into like the late majority, of people. So you're on this bell curve, right? And the bell curve starts at the very bottom, and it's the innovators, it's the early adopters. And then once those early adopters reach to a certain point, it becomes that early majority. And that early majority are the people that are taking cues from the early adopters. But it's like those people that are right on the verge of early adopters and early majority that kind of dictate what happens next. And that's who we're helping to reach. It's the early majority. It's like teetering right on the moms, so to speak, in the dads and the it's not just the technophiles and the innovators that we're looking to go after. And really then it becomes the startup's job to keep them interested and to really provide a cool service. Like Instagram, they wouldn't nearly be where they are today if it wasn't for their product. I mean, the product is awesome.
Right, right.
So all we can do is kind of get them to the point where they can attract the right people, and then it's sort of up to them to make sure that they're doing the improvements that our users are suggesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So given that, are you going to have any, sort of structure or framework? Like, for example, I think of what is it? It's the Y Combinator, where, they have an advising type of process where, they talk about like office hours and stuff like that. Do you envision having something like that where, you are getting all this feedback from users and you'd be able to go to them and say, hey, have you thought about doing this? Or have you thought about getting together with this company? Because I think there might be a synergy there given your feedback. Or is it really just kind of, it's up to the company. You give them the stuff, and then they make of it what they will.
Well, that's a great question. It's something that we really haven't delved into. But what I can tell you is that we have all these people now that have sort of approached us and said, hey, we want to get in, and, like, for example, there's a blogger and writer in New York who wants to cover all New York startups. So any startup that's based out of New York that comes through our system, he wants to cover. He like wants first crack at it. There's investors that we're talking to that have an interest in, possibly being seed people for some of these startups.
Nice.
So ultimately, we're trying to get to that full service capacity. We're trying to form strategic partnerships with companies that can provide services to startups that give us more of a full service, application for to make it more of that incubator feel.
Yeah.
But it's the difference is this, is that incubators and accelerators in their traditional form are focused more on the founders than they are on the startups. It's like Y Combinator, for example, it's like they pivot they either pivot the idea altogether, or they just scrap the idea and they just focus on the skills of the founders.
Right.
And then they kind of retrofit them into an idea that fits the skill set of the people. And sometimes they mix match the people, I mean, it's like they're just looking for people that are good at creating concepts and building products. So which isn't, there's nothing wrong with that. So there's nothing wrong with their model. They're doing very well. We just got a different approach to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, for a startup, we kind of look at it as a, for early stage startups, at least, you know, we look at it as sort of a no-brainer for them. It's like, what are you losing? You're giving up some early equity, but you know the return on that is pretty visible. You know, I mean, you can see it from the get go. You know what the potential is, and if it doesn't take, you know you're not giving up anything. So, so it either becomes adopted by the users or it doesn't. So you know there isn't a whole lot of risk in trying the system out.
So I have a kind of a, I don't know if it's a random question about specific the startups that you're getting. I know that a lot of online services have a fee of some sort. I think when it comes to huge social organizations, the ones that come to mind first are like dating sites. And so my question is, as you're vetting these companies that you want to bring in, Are you going to be looking at things like whether they have fees or not, or what? So this is a twofold question. What criteria are you looking at as you're vetting companies? And then the other side of that is specifically about like fees and the need for the users to actually invest in the product, you know, one way or another. Are you accepting companies that do that as well?
Yeah. Yes, we are. However, they can't charge our users.
All right.
They can charge our users' followers, you know, but they can't charge our users to try out, you know, to have access to the system.
That makes sense.
Some people might see value in just being, you know, beta users for the startups that we're presenting. So, you know,
right.
Some people really get a kick out of being early users and checking out things and being the first to look at it. We have a lot of tech bloggers that are users. And I know that the tech bloggers are probably looking at this from a standpoint of getting access to things really quickly and seeing the things before they really hit the market. But, yeah, no, it's, you know, we're not charging our users, and we expect that our startups not to charge our users either. It's the rule for our business.
Cool.
So even if it's a, you know, if it's a subscription service, you must be given the subscription so you can actually use it. So
that sounds cool to me.
Yeah. Because one of the variables, like I said, is the result of influence. So and the startup dictates what those results are that they're looking for. And one of those results may be sales. You know, it may be that we need, you know, we want subscribers that pay $9.95 a month, and that could be one of the things that we're tracking. So within your network, when you're sending it out, it's the actual, what we're tracking is how many people are you able to convert to buy it. That could be just one of the three variables. The other one might be how many people can you just get to click on it. And that might be weighted a little bit differently than the people that actually you get to buy it, that sort of thing. So we want people to be as authentic as possible. So to be able to use the system is critical, you know, to making this thing work.
Right.
It's a good question, though. I mean, it's something that, they, like, from the very beginning, was like a question that we asked ourselves. It's like, well, you know, startups are going to want to just use this just to try to find paid subscribers. You know,
right.
I mean, and that's not what we're doing here.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Matthew. I was going to, my next question was going to be, do you have any startups that are currently working their way through Wahooly, maybe one or two that you would say are your favorites that you could recommend?
I do, but I can't say the name of it. I do have a favorite. Yeah, I do have a favorite. It really is awesome. And it's shocking to me that it hasn't, like, taken off. And, in fact, I'll tell you this. I saw it on 2 weeks ago. So we're on AngelList because we're actually raising a seed round right now as well. And so we're on AngelList, and it came up into my feed that this investor started following this particular startup that applied to be part of our system. And he's really gung-ho on using our system. He's emailed us like 3 times, and he's really eager to get going. But we haven't finalized everything yet, but I know they'll be part of our system. But when I saw him on AngelList and I saw that the investor followed that particular setup, it was like a sinking feeling in my stomach. I'm like, oh, God, we gotta launch now because I want this startup in our system. It's almost like I didn't want them to get traction too soon. But yeah, it's a really cool idea, and it looks like everything is developed fully, and I'm sure it has its issues, and those will need to be fixed and corrected. But it's shocking to me that it hasn't exploded. So yeah, I mean I shouldn't say there's just one, because there are quite a few that are just like the things that you just look at and you go, God, why didn't I think of that? but that's the cool part about this, right? I mean, it's like, and this, I'm not a wealthy, entrepreneur by any means. We're bootstrapping it. We started out, and up until just pretty recently, up until we needed to hire an attorney, we were less than $100 into this thing.
Wow.
The beauty of. That's the beauty of what you can do now in today's
world.
So there's this, and what we're doing is what we want. It's like we're building something that we think is cool, because we've never, as us founders, we're not accredited investors. We don't have a net worth of $2 million. We don't make $200,000 plus a year, to justify being an accredited investor. So we wanted access, just like accredited investors did, to startups, to private equity. And this, so basically we're providing a route for anybody that's ever wanted to be a high net worth individual to get their hands on an early startup. That's what we're providing. And that's the really cool thing about this. Because it's an innate characteristic in all of us that we all want to be part of something big. And that's the drive, and that's kind of the excitement that we're seeing out there too. And I'm glad that people are grasping onto it, and I'll have this, because we figured that there were going to be people with shared vision, but there's a lot of people with that shared vision. It's probably helpful now that since Facebook launched that announced their IPO, that all these stories have come out about how many people are going to be millionaires once it goes public.
Right.
And it's like, wow, I mean, if you were just the first, if you're like the first employee, or if you just had a piece of it, or you just had, and that's the real crux of what we're doing, it's like, somebody said this once, and I thought it was really cool. It's like, we're giving the 99% percenters the opportunity to see what the 1%ers have had, So it's, using, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to kind of expand on that point and say, that one of the cool parts about where James and I got to grow up is that experience of seeing people who got to ride the roller coaster that you're trying to help people on. A lot of people who started before the .com bubble began, and people even old, who began even before that, who were helping build the foundations of all sorts of computer networks and stuff, and getting to see people do what they love to do, and it's not just a job for these people, it's their passion, and to really see that rise and become awesome and become something that everybody uses, and actually get to interact with the people there. I know that there's a store downtown in the city that we live in where he's a, I can't remember, unfortunately, off the top of my head, what website it was that he helped co-found. But now he runs a toy model shop in the middle of this extremely expensive real estate because he can, to be part of that experience and to get to see that, I think, for both James and I, there's a real craving to the financial aspect of it is always a benefit, but there's a real sense of excitement and energy that comes about with these tech startups that grow so fast and they get so huge and they help people, you know, do stuff that they never imagined that they were going to be able to do before. And so it's really exciting to see that from my perspective. And so that's, to me, it's like, when we first started talking about Wahooly, my immediate reaction was, oh man, I got to sign up, because I know what that energy level is, and it got me really excited. So I'm excited for everything you guys are doing.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And, you know, I mean, that's the cool thing, is that everybody sort of wins in this thing. You know, I mean, it's, you know, we're basing our business model. We changed it's so fluid, you know, the things that we're doing. And originally we wanted to charge users, and then we backed off of that once we figured out sort of the clout idea. And then we had this idea of charging a fee to startups, like a monthly fee, like a management fee, kind of like VCs do, in addition to the equity. And we just backed off of that as well. And the hard part about that is that we, in spite of the fact that we had, you know, this management fee, which is, you know, I guess fairly nominal, we had 230 companies apply that all sort of agreed, because one of the questions is how much can you commit to, that all agreed to pay the fee. And in spite of that, we're backing off of it. And the reason being is that our intention was never to make money, like build a business based off monthly fees. It's like that's not our business model. It's a really short-term mindset that we had of how are we going to cover our monthly nut, you know,
right.
Like our burn rate. You know, it's like, how can we do this independently without needing the help of investors? And that's why we realized that when we step back, it's like we're forcing ourselves to try to figure out a way to make a monthly income based off this model. And we're like, that's the wrong way to look at it. You know, if we had the luxury of having $1 million right now, would we still charge that fee? And the answer was no, we wouldn't. Because it wasn't the right approach to it. So yeah, now we sort of changed that. So now our interest is in, you know, the long-term viability of all these businesses, just like our users, you know, are. Ultimately, we also are going to, you know, integrate some brand campaigns that work as sort of incentives to our users to be active, which is another sort of revenue stream for us at some point, but it's not going to be immediate. It's going to be as we build our system and as we figure out what the motivations need to be of our user base. So, yeah, that's the really cool thing, is that we all have a shared vision. You know, it's like our users, including us, all have the same goal in mind, which is make these companies that come through our system wildly successful so we can all benefit. And, you know, I think with that, you know, with that sort of mindset where everybody, where it's like we don't see a different value than you do, that's the right mentality, because then we're going to be, you know, looking at every opportunity in the same light that you would as a user, you know, because it's in our interest as well. So I'm so happy that you see that and you share in that excitement, because ultimately that's what we're hoping, is that the users share in that excitement with us.
Do you have another question?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah. It covers all my...
you know, thanks for taking the time to chat with us. It really does sound really exciting.
Cool.
You know, what it is that you guys are doing, and it's cool that you guys are getting the kind of traction that you are yourselves, and because that just means you're going to, you know, that will be to the benefit of other companies as well.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just leverage. You know, I mean, I know that the first 50 companies that we launch with are probably going to have exposure from a couple different media networks as well, because we've had you know, there's a bunch of different media outlets that want to do the exclusive on the first 50 companies that we announce. So, I mean, I think especially that first group of 50 are really going to see some major things happen to them,
yeah.
Just because they're kind of part of this brand new phase, you know. But the nice thing is the people that come in the second quarter and third quarter and fourth quarter are going to benefit from an experience system. So,
yeah.
You know, while we launch on January 16th, we won't have every feature, you know, live at that point. So quarter two, those companies will benefit because we're going to have more features built in. You know, we'll absolutely have, you know, the metrics built, and, you know, there'll be statistics that back up everything that we're doing, and we'll know what's working and what's not. You know, so, you know, every step along the way, there's going to be a new layer of you know, of impact for the startups that join. But, yeah, it's exciting. So I'm really glad that I'm really happy to share it with you guys. So I appreciate the opportunity for that.
Yeah, thanks. We look forward to tracking progress too.
All right, cool.
All right,
guys. Well, thanks again, and look for an email next week.
All right, we will.
I'll keep my eyes up.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Take care, guys.
Right.
Bye.
So tell me what your analysis is.
So I mean, I like what I hear. It's a very interesting company, and, you know, all of the red flags or, you know, things where I might have been a little bit concerned, he definitely addressed. You know, my first one was, how do you make sure you don't get into garbage companies? And it sounds like they don't have to worry about that. They already have exciting companies that are applying. And,
yeah.
And that in itself is exciting because they really need to hit a home run in the next year or, you know, whatever, in their first set of exits. And because if they don't, you know, users are going to get, they'll be like, wow, that's a lot of effort for not a lot of return. And, you know, and it sounds like that won't necessarily be a problem. But we'll see. I really like that it is, you know, win-win-win type of model where if a company does well, the customer does well, they do well, the company itself does well. Those are the kind of businesses that tend to succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed that. My first reaction was, and as you know, I kind of came into this with maybe a little bit less background knowledge than you. So I kind of got a little more of a fresh take from everything, and it, I don't know, it all sounded really cool and really exciting. I got the feeling that, like you said, you know, there were a couple of concerns, but it sounds like they spend a tremendous amount of time thinking and planning and considering these things, and they really are coming at it with the right perspective and the right attitude in the intention of, you know, getting the best chance of success. But I completely agree with you that they've got to hit one out of the ballpark really, really soon and get some excitement about the actual potential of what you can do, because I get the feeling that, you know, like traction's deadly, because you can start to get traction, but if you lose it at some point, if there's a slowdown, it can be incredibly difficult to win those people back. But it sounds like they're doing everything right to get the early adopters to continue to have them stay excited throughout this process. So I think,
I love the gamification that they're implementing there, and it's got the three aspects that are so important of the promotion and the usability and the feedback. I think that, you know, that's going to be part of their secret sauce, you know, where that's going to be hard for anybody else to copycat, if you will. And that it will keep people engaged by giving them points. And what's cool about this is that they're not just internet points, as you eloquently stated. You know, it actually counts towards potential real money, which is cool.
Yeah, well, and you know, the other thing that I always come back to is it's like, I for a while there, I used to answer random Yahoo questions all the time for it was a couple month period, and all I was doing, and why I stopped was because I realized I was just trying to get Yahoo points, because you get special features when you have enough points and you're a big enough question answerer person. And I was like excited about getting that, and then I realized I don't even want to use any of these features.
I just want to be able to say, I got it. You know, and it sounds like that's exactly what they're doing. And I thought it was funny, but I appreciated the honesty of the fact that these points aren't really worth very much. I mean, they're hard to earn. You got to get a ton of them before they become valuable. And when they do become valuable, oftentimes they're just for extra cool features so you can do more work. You know, it's not like they're sent, you know, the one pennies or dollars or whatever. They're, you know, but like you said, because it's there and because it's sort of a competitive thing, and even though you're not directly competing with somebody you know, there's definitely a sense of excitement and exhilaration that grows. And so you're going to build this community of people that are really intimate, that have real intimate knowledge of a bunch of startups. They're really well connected. It's a huge network. They're really enthusiastic because, A, hopefully something that they're excited about, and, B, they've got just day-to-day motivation to be more impressive within the community. And I think one of the things that they're doing right is that by not charging money and by not limiting it to only people with X amount of clout, it really allows you to step in and puts everybody on an even playing level and playing field. So you'll get people like you and I who may not have as much clout or may not want to make huge investments, but hopefully can bring good ideas. And so if we get involved with one and as our voice rises, you know, you'll have more influence. But because it's all evil, it's an equal playing field when you get into the system, there's a lot of potential to grow and to stay involved in the product and in the program, what they're doing. So I don't know. I just, from everything, it sounds like this is the hardest part, and this is my analysis, is it sounds like they're doing everything right. I don't have any major red flags. Now they just need a bit of luck.
Just execute on it, really.
Right. You know, it's you know, why did Foursquare take off? Why are they continuing to grow even when Facebook tries to deliver a competing product? You know, it's because they got lucky. You know, there's a certain amount of, you know, you can have the best product in the world.
I think having a good product and doing that is also important. And
we'll learn
more as we actually get to play with it and see how other companies and, you know, see how that goes. But
cool.
It's exciting.
Definitely.
It was nice getting to talk with him for a bit and just learn more about his company and what they're up to.
Yeah, I appreciated him getting on the phone with us and talking about all this.
Yeah. So, everybody, thanks for listening to this interview with Dana Severson from Wahooly.com. I highly recommend that you check it out. It's WAHOOLY.com. You can read more about it on our website, and we also link to other people who have talked about it. So we'll talk to you next time. Thank you.